Good morning, everybody, and welcome to another Nacho Tuesday. Today I have John Nance here with Redwood Advisors, and today we're going to switch up the format a little bit. John's going to give us some really keen insights into a lot of the information that he provides to a lot of executives out there to make better strategic decisions. He's going to walk us through a great presentation today that usually is privy only to special paying clients. So today's a very special opportunity to learn from one of the best in the business. So without further ado, I would love if you could introduce your company, John.
Awesome. Yeah. Good. Good to meet everybody. So we're going to walk through this presentation on OKRs and a little bit about our company real quick. So I started my career at McKinsey & Company and have really been into strategy and organizational excellence my whole career. I'm just super passionate about it. And the backstory of our company is we help kind of enterprise B2B SaaS companies who want strategic clarity and an organization perfectly designed to deliver on it. And so what that means is we do a lot of strategic planning and a fair amount of organizational excellence work, so design, et cetera. And OKRs are a very a big part of that kind of what we call strategic planning piece. And so we're going to talk about that today.
Yep. And for the uninitiated, what are OKRs?
Yeah. I'll go back. So OKR stands for objectives and key results. And Andy, I'll probably once I actually have some slides that kind of walk us through what they mean and how you can use them. But at a high level, it's basically objectives and key results. It's a kind of, I would call it more of an operational planning methodology that really was popularized by Google. So Google was kind of the company that used this to, obviously Google's been really successful. They used OKRs and I think helped popularize the concept. And now it's becoming a more and more popular concept across industries. But it's very popular, particularly in technology. So the point of today is we're going to talk about how do you use OKRs to actually drive transformation in your business. And I'm going to kind of walk people through that. So just to give a little bit of background on us, these are some clients that we've worked with. So probably some companies that are familiar to folks, Atlassian, DocuSign, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, VMware, et cetera. So we're with a lot of really large companies. We also work with smaller companies as well. We don't necessarily put their logos on as much because you probably never heard of them. But suffice it to say that we've worked across the spectrum, really, really big enterprise clients as well as smaller kind of high growth companies.
Oh, John, can you update the slide real quick? Sorry about that. It looks like you're supposed to be on slide 4 there. There you go.
Let's see here. Great. Okay. Is that good? Okay. Perfect. Okay. Let me see. I'm going to see if I can get this in a presentation mode if that goes through on your side. Nope. Okay. For some reason, it's not letting me go into presentation mode. Okay. No problem. Do you see the presentation mode if I do that, Andy, or no?
I did not actually.
No. Okay. All right. We'll just stay in this. We'll stay in this view. Okay. No problem. So what I want to talk about, what we're going to talk about today is we're going to talk about three key factors to drive transformational change. So what are those factors that drive transformational change? We're going to talk about one of those factors, which is thinking big. How do you do that? And I'm going to give you guys a little bit of a cheat sheet. It's a strategic planning one pager. And then we're going to spend most of our time talking about executing transformation OKR best practices. So how do you use OKRs to do this? So before we get into the specifics of OKRs, I think a lot of times when people talk about OKRs, we just kind of start at OKRs. And I actually think that's not the right place to start the story. So I think what we want to do is we're going to sort of step back. And we're going to talk about transformation. So how do you actually deliver transformation? So, which is really the point of OKRs. OKRs is just a methodology. What we're really trying to do is drive successful value-creating transformations. So Sandy Ogg, who is a kind of performance executive at Blackstone, did a really, really interesting study. And it really caught my attention when it came out. And he looked at Blackstone's portfolio. And he was kind of asking the question of, you know, some of our companies have done extremely well. Some of our companies have done not as well. What's the difference? What's the difference? And not only what's the difference, if can we strip out the macroeconomic factors, like what industry they're in, et cetera. Like there's a lot of times there's things going on that people don't really have control over. But if we just look at the things that we actually do seem to have a lot of influence over, what are the differences between the transformational change success stories and not. And there were three behaviors and ways of sort of operating that really distinguished the three. One was thinking big. So did the company have a really big vision of, hey, this is the role we want to play in our industry. This is how we want to transform our industry. This is the new ways we want to engage with our consumers. Were they kind of doing that thinking big, or were they kind of just saying incrementalism, more of the same? So thinking big was one of the key factors of a successful, of really successful transformations. It was almost a precondition. The next one, which is really interesting, was starting small, which is really, it's I think at a superficial level, in tension with the first one, thinking big. Because you're like, wow, I want to think big, but then I want to start really small, right? And what he basically found there is if companies thought really big, and then they would have these grand plans of, okay, in 5 years, we're going to do this. And in 2 years, we're going to do this. They would just sort of stay at this conceptual level and nothing would actually change. So it was just, you get kind of lost in your own grandiosity. Yep. So starting small was, hey, let's get really, really specific. Like, kind what do we want to do this? Go ahead, Andy.
Oh, kind of like an MVP for a product, right? So you start with the most basic viable, minimal viable product, bring that to market. Then you could add all the other great features there. Sometimes people get lost in the weeds of the details of the larger vision, but don't have a good beachhead when they first go to market.
Totally. That's actually a great analogy. And I think, or a good use case of this, like if you look at this, I think that you can take this and also use it for a product. Right? If you look at these three methods and then obviously I'm going to add the last one of acting fast, you know, well, which obviously couples really well with starting small, because I'm starting small and I'm acting fast. Absolutely. And if you think it's, if you just take a product perspective, right? You want to be thinking big about what's possible, but you don't want to get lost in that. You want to start small and you want to act fast. So I think this methodology works really good at the corporate level. Totally. I think it works really good at the product level. I've actually never thought about that, but Andy, I think that's a really good point. I think it also works really good on the personal level. We won't go down that rabbit hole, but I think if you think about yourself as a person, I think this also applies.
Totally.
So we want to, so today I'm going to, we have a little bit of an ambitious agenda for the limited amount of time we have, but that's okay. We're going to get through it. So I want to talk a little bit. Step one, start by thinking big. And our firm, we do a lot of strategic planning. We do a lot of OKRs. And so I want to give everybody who's, you know, who's tuning in here, just a little bit of a cheat sheet of, okay, how do I think big? Right. We will oftentimes do larger projects where we help people kind of think big and build out a full strategy, but sometimes that's not an option or it doesn't make sense. You're not that big a company, et cetera. I have been doing this for almost 15 years. And my favorite one pager strategic overview is this. I think it's the most flexible and the most it's kind of relevant to the largest kind of set of companies. And it basically gets you to think through three simple questions. And actually, the key is you actually have to think them through. So one is, what is our winning aspiration? So what does success look like in 3 to 5 years? If you're a smaller company, if you're below 10 million, I would make it 1 to 2 years. If you're a more established company, 3 to 5. And the way to think about that question is, if we were to meet in a year or two or 3 or 5, at a dinner table, and we were asking ourselves, were we successful? What would have to be true? Next one is, where do you want to play? Really getting clear on where are we playing and where are we not playing? And actually the second version, the inverse of the question, is oftentimes the more important one. Where are you not going to play over this next time period? And getting everyone aligned. We're not going to play in this particular product category. We're not going to play in this geography. We're not going to play in this channel. We're just not going to do it, right? That helps you focus, which is incredibly helpful. And the third one is, how are you going to win, right? And again, the devil's in the details here, but ostensibly, there's probably competitors for what you're doing. Or if there's not competitors, there's at least substitutes. If nothing else, there's the status quo. So how are you going to win? Like, what makes your particular company or your product a lot better, right, than your competitors? And really answering that question in a realistic way, recognizing the competition and substitute products you face. So anyways, this is thinking big. Most of the day, I want to talk about these OKRs. How do you translate your strategy thinking big into action? So that's really about the start small and act fast. So Andy had asked at the beginning, what is an OKR? So we'll do a quick primer on that. So there are two components, an objective and a key result, okay? Objective is a high-level qualitative objective tied to your strategy, spoken in plain spoken English. So for example, become the biggest B2B SaaS provider in our product category by revenue in North America. That's an objective. Then the key result is a quantifiable result, a falsifiable result that it can be true or not true that supports the objective. So for example, we want to grow our revenue from 30 million to 39 million, 30% growth in the next fiscal year. That would be a result. And the thing about the result is you can go figure out, did that happen or not, right? And then you can sort of hold yourself accountable. So that's what OKRs are. So I want to talk a little bit about, we're going to talk a bit about principles, and then we're going to talk about some best practices, and I'm going to walk you guys through an example. That'll be kind of our plan for the day. So we've done this a lot. We're lucky we've been able to do this with some great companies like Atlassian. So we're very familiar with how to do OKRs and to do OKRs well. So there's a lot to say here. I'm not going to tell you everything, but I will tell you three principles that I think very, very commonly will serve you well. The first is select and focus on your top strategic priorities. I think people do not spend enough time really debating and thinking through what their OKR should be. This should not be a flippant or one afternoon activity. For these to be effective, you really want them to be on the money, right? You know, are we talking about total revenue? Are we talking about gross new revenue? Are we talking about expansion revenue from our existing customers? Do we want to break revenue up into different results or just have it as one? Do we want to look at our digital business versus our direct business, our sales enabled versus our product led growth? There's lots of ways to think about it. Do we break it by geography? So there's lots of different ways to do this and really slowing down and saying, okay, what are the most important objectives? Right? Let's really figure that out and then select the right results that help us know whether we're hitting that objective. That's key principle number one. The second is, and I've seen this work to great effect. A lot of times people, particularly if they're new to OKRs, will just pick one number. Here's our result. Our revenue will be $39 million per the previous example. And that's fine. That's a good way to get started. But what we basically have found, you know, in our experience is that oftentimes there are three different types of goals. And a lot of times people are debating what number to use, and they're actually not aligned on which of the types of goals we're talking about. So, but there are three. One is a budget goal, which is this is what we want to promise finance, and this is what we want to promise our investors. Like, we are signing up for this. Another goal is our actual target. Because your budget goal, you're always sandbagging a little bit because you want to, right? You don't want to go back and say, hey, we under hit our budget. That's, you know, avoid that if you can. Target is, hey, this is actually what we want to accomplish. And then stretch goal is, man, that would be amazing. It's possible, but it's a stretch, right? These are three different numbers. So when people are just doing OKRs for the first time, and I've seen this, and it's unfortunate, but the CEO might be saying the stretch goal, and then the, you know, finance team is talking about a budget goal, and then the product leader is talking about a target goal. Totally. And so everyone's talking about one number, but they're actually talking about different numbers in their head, right? So we think if that's happening, one good way to do it is just have three goals. You know, and you'll see this in the literature, like a 0.5, 0.7, 1.0 is kind of a numeric synonym for this. But it's basically just saying, you know, it's basically what's our budget? We really want to hit this. target. It's like a little bit of a stretch, but like call it a 40% likelihood. And then a stretch goal is maybe 10 to 20% likely. And you can have three goals. So for our revenue, it could be 39 million or 42 million is the target. And then 50 million would be the stretch, right? You have three separate goals. Last thing is decoupling performance management from OKRs. We've seen this before and highly, you know, just generally, and I can see why, because it's like, wow, we've just set all these goals and we've cascaded the goals down the organization. Hey, if someone hits their OKR, let's just base their performance bonus on this. Makes sense at a cursory level. The problem is it creates a ton of really weird incentives for people. What you'll find is people will start to fudge the numbers. Everyone will start to sandbag. People won't communicate information. It creates a bunch of very weird incentives. So we generally recommend decoupling them, right? You can still assess your folks, but do it a different way and let the OKRs be the OKRs, right? And don't let that become an alternative for your performance management. And then essential questions we like to have people think through to kick your process off. One, is your CEO bought in to the system? If not, you'll oftentimes see OKRs will be championed by someone in the organization, the head of product, the head of revenue, the head of business operations, whatever. If the CEO isn't bought in, don't do it. Just don't do it. We don't have time to unpack it, but just say that's really a essential part of it. Second, what principles will guide your system? So before you jump into this exercise, like what are the principles that you want to unify? So one principle might be, we're not going to use this for performance management. Another principle might be, we want our OKRs to represent our target goals, not our budget or stretch goals. We want to pick one. Another OKR might be, another principle might be, we want to be able to provide updated numbers every month on the OKRs, on the results that we select. So you just kind of, because there's lots of decisions to make. And the last is, what OKR should you create? And then we basically have learned that you want your objectives to be attainable and aligned to your strategy. And you want your results to be linked to accessible and easy to track data. It's not the ideal metric. It's the practical metric is the result you should track. So if you can't get, I'm trying to think of a really good example, but if you can't get, you know, updated numbers on closed sales the last month for whatever reason, then pick a metric that you can get, right? And that's really easy to get, because that ease is really important to make the system work. So Andy, I think that takes us up. I know we're 19 minutes in. I've got an example of Disney. I will go ahead and jump to the conclusion just so we've got time for other stuff. But this is, I kind of want to show how this works. So if you take Disney as an example, their high-level strategy, you know, entertain, inform, and inspire people around the globe with world-class entertainment properties, movies and content, cruises and digital properties. That's kind of like what they're up to. And their three-year goal, expand our global footprint with new properties, expanded digital assets, and an even better customer experience. So this might be their strategy. This is what we call the thinking big part. This would cascade down into an OKR system. And I'm kind of simplifying this, obviously, but this is a nice example of how this would work. Objective A, grow our global business. So we want to increase our non-core market global sales by 7%. So probably like ex-US and ex-Europe. We want to delight our company customers. That's another key objective. Improve our net promoter score by 10%. And then objective C, build a great corporate culture, which is achieve a weekly employee satisfaction of 8+. So these would be like, here are these specific objectives that support the strategy. And then there's these specific results that are, you know, relatively easy to go get those numbers to determine whether or not we're accomplishing and making progress on our objectives. So that's like a very high level example of how OKRs look in the wild. So with that, we can go to discussion.
I'm keeping in mind 7% year-over-year growth for Disney is pretty big. So
yeah, exactly. Exactly.
And it might be able to set some bigger goals there, bigger ambitions, I guess.
Totally.
So I guess where do you see a lot of companies fail with their goal setting? Obviously, for a lot of startups, there's a lot of moving parts. SMBs as well, they might not be as established as companies. What do you think what should be some of the most important goals they first go for, some of the smaller companies out there?
Okay, you're talking about small companies?
Is there a difference between small companies and what they should focus on that's reasonable as opposed to maybe a more mature company that's mid-size and above?
Absolutely. There's a huge difference. So the smaller the company, the tighter the timeline needs to be. So if you're a startup, you might literally be like, what are we trying to do in the next 1 to 3 months? Mm-hmm. And then a larger company might be, what do we want to do in the next 3 to 5 years?
Yep.
So the level of uncertainty, which is highly correlated to the size of the company, should dictate the amount of time you're looking at. So if you're Disney, Disney isn't going anywhere. It's not going to, unless civilization collapses, it's not going to, Disney is like a cockroach. It's probably going to be around for a long time, right? It's a corporate, we're going to have a hard time eliminating it. So for them, it makes sense to think about 3 to 5 years out, potentially even 10 to 15 years. So when I worked with the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, we thought about 15 years. That's how they were doing strategy.
Yeah.
Because they're like, we know we're not going anywhere. It's our money. We have $60 billion. It's ours. So we're not going bankrupt. Let's think really, really big. And then a corporate company might be 3 to 5 years and a startup might be 1 to 6 months. And then you kind of follow the same exercise. So the amount of time you're looking at and the amount of time you spend,
yep,
are both related to size. The larger and more established the company, the longer the time period and the more time you spend on the exercise. The smaller the company, the less amount of time you spend, and the less time you spend on it,
yep,
because it's more iterative.
Yep, I could see that. And so for some of the work that you do, where do you see a lot of your opportunity? Seems like you work with a lot of larger clients. I feel like a lot of startups and maybe SMBs might not do as good of a job, doing this type of planning. Whereas, mid-sized companies kind of know that there's a problem and they might be more apt to actually take action on it. Do you find a difference, yeah, between how startups approach this problem as opposed to mid-sized companies from the companies that you've worked with?
Yeah, the smaller companies just oftentimes don't do it. And, I think if you're trying to get product market fit, I think that's okay. Obviously I do this for a living, so I'm super biased. But I think it's just, you're going to spend so much time on development and marketing and sales. It's like, to not have some sense of strategy just seems like a big blind spot.
Unfortunately, I've seen it happen too often.
Yeah. So I always encourage people to say, look, like, it doesn't have to be perfect. It doesn't have to be, but just spend a little bit of time. Like, you could just take the one pager that I showed and just fill that out and have a conversation around, what does success look like? What does success look like for us?
Yep. And would you be able to take that, an editable version of that and post it into the LinkedIn group? So everybody, if you're okay with that, for maybe some of the companies watching today could, put that to use. And obviously, yeah, that's a starting point, but, if you want, better strategic direction and everything, ask John here for help. You just gave a masterclass here. So
yeah, I'll send you the PDF, Andy, and I'm happy to share the content we shared today.
Right. Yeah, I feel like startups probably do need it the most. And for startups, it might be a more reasonable approach, maybe the MVP, like I mentioned before, right? So figuring out a product first that could actually, sell in the market, instead of going way too big and adding all these features, it could really start with the minimal viable product that's going to get you to that product market fit stage. Then, once you have an established company and you start having revenue coming in, then you can really start to try to build your company more around those revenue goals.
Totally. Absolutely.
That's right. What does an engagement typically look like for you when you work with companies? How do they become aware of the problem and what's that process look like for them to, get in touch with you and start onboarding, I guess, with some of the work that you do?
Yeah, great question. So kind of like I said at the beginning, we help companies who want strategic clarity and an organization perfectly designed to deliver on it. So typically it's really, hey, I want some more strategic clarity. You know, I mean, that's the number one. It's like the CEO or the chairman of the board or someone's like, hey, you know what? We don't know where we're headed. Like, we just feel adrift here, or something just feels off. And like, and there's a recognition of that. That's typically when someone would reach out to us and say, hey, I've heard of Redwood. I've heard they do really good work. Why don't you reach out to John and the Redwood team and see if they can be helpful to you, right? Because this is all they do. So that's kind of when we get pulled in, is at a high level. There's a lot of different specific use cases, like, hey, maybe we just got a $25 million investment, or we want to go through a fundraising round and we want to make sure that we can explain our strategy and approach so we can get the highest valuation. That's actually one of the most common reasons we get brought in, is a company's done really well and it's about to go raise some money. It's like, well, if you have a good strategy, you're going to get a higher multiple.
Yeah.
So like the payoff there is just, it's a no brainer, right? So that's a lot of times we get brought in that context. And then what it looks like is, you know, if it's a company that's over 100 million in revenue, it's going to be a 2 to 3 month process. And it's a lot of analysis, a lot of interviews and alignment. If it's below 100 million, it's a smaller company, it's probably like 3 to 8 weeks, you know. If it's a really small, below 10 million, it's probably like a 3 to 4 week exercise with a lot of work, some workshops and interviews and some analysis. So you kind of right size the effort to fit the company. But regardless, you kind of come out of it being like, okay, we're a lot more clear about what we're trying to accomplish. And we're a lot more clear on how we're going to do it and who's going to do it. And so we find that it is really helpful for people.
And I noticed that so you guys are listed, John's company here is listed in our services marketplace, which is a new initiative we launched over the last few months. I noticed that you guys had an offer. It was for $95,000 towards fundraising. Can you explain more about what that offer is? You mentioned earlier that you come into a lot of companies during their fundraising efforts because, you know, getting that strategic alignment, better understanding their vision, how they're going to get there, helps them with their fundraising efforts. So can you maybe go over the fundraising pitch and how that what that offer is all about?
Yeah, totally. So it's sort of a standardized offer that we put together, Andy, I think based on our conversation with you and Nacho around, you know, kind of targeting kind of those high growth earlier stage companies of, I've got a valuation, I've got a fundraising round coming up. I want to put my best foot forward and I want to work with some experts to make sure that I get the value I deserve, right? Because you've built something, right? And so helping people come in with best in class, you know, let's look at your market. Let's size it. Let's see which segments you're going after. Let's explain how what you're doing links to the opportunity, and help people kind of put those market sizes with an external third party that maybe has a little more credibility than you, your team might, right? So having us come in, because I'm not going to fudge the numbers. I'm just not. That's not how we work. So we're kind of like lawyers in that regard. Like whatever we're going to do is going to be above board. But we'll come in and we'll say, hey, look, what is the story? What's the best story that we can give you guys? And then you can take that out as part of your fundraising and say, hey, look, here's our strategy. We had a third party help us come in and size the market, et cetera, and et cetera. So that's kind of what that is.
Yeah, and I think a lot of startups, sometimes you get, or any company fundraising for that matter, they get really stuck in terms of, you know, what they know, what their perspective is. And it's hard to like really look, you know, put yourselves in the investor's shoes. And that's where maybe like a third opinion might be kind of helpful to look at both parties' interests and how they could better align, right? So the company obviously has a story behind it, a product that they're selling and an opportunity there. And, you know, I see really investors as a customer to be able to invest and ultimately, hopefully earn a return on it. But obviously understanding their interest there too. You know, that's where I see a lot of value actually being, which is, you know, helping those two clarify what their needs are and trying to see if you can find alignment there.
Totally. Totally. Yep. Exactly.
Yeah. And I think, so what's your goal? What's your 3 to 5 year goal for Redwood Advisors?
Yeah, that's a good question. So we've had about 30% growth, I want to say, for the last 6-7 years. And we're a consulting firm. So that's great. So I think as we look out 3 to 5 years, and we actually do, by the way, we do everything we talk about, by the way. I'm not going to show you guys our strategy deck, but suffice to say it's quite robust. That, you know, goal number one is continuing that. And that for us looks like, you know, continuing to get, you know, we're very specific how many products we're getting. So we have very clear goals on how many products we get and what the size is. So that's one thing. The other thing is we're doing a lot of more work in technology. So we're really growing our network in tech. That's another goal we're tracking of how big our network is in technology and B2B SaaS in particular. And the third thing is we're starting to get, we're having some companies, particularly smaller companies, bring us on as kind of growth investors. Interesting enough, in the healthcare space. So that's kind of a new line of business for us. And so we have really, really big goals for that part of our company the next 3 years.
That's great. Well, yeah, you guys definitely practice what you preach. You just rattled this off.
We do. Trust me, we do.
Definitely, yeah. Yeah, I've interacted with you a bit, and it's been a pleasure working with you, John. And, you know, we look forward to growing your business together and having you a part of the services marketplace here as a partner here. Once again, thank you so much for coming on today. Everybody should definitely check out Redwood Advisors. We do have it in the Nacho Nacho services marketplace. So feel free to check it out today. Like we mentioned, there's an offer there if you want to take advantage of that. John's an expert here, obviously a McKinsey background, and he's been helping a lot of great companies out there. So, you know, definitely great to learn from the best, and I appreciate you coming on today. And John, looking forward to growing our businesses together.
Awesome. Thank you, Andy. Appreciate the time. Appreciate the opportunity. And I will send you a PDF of that presentation.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Okay, guys. Thank you. Bye.
Cool. Yeah, that was pretty good, man.